informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texans get the victory over Jacksonville yesterday, the Jaguars. David Culley, look, cool. I mean, I said this like 3 weeks ago that he's the Ted Lasso of NFL coaches. Like, he's kind of the lovable character, probably not the best head coach in the business. Yes, he likes to bite his tongue.
It's a weird thing.
It's easy to pull for David Culley, even in an organization that's been an embarrassment to the city. Here was David Culley after the game yesterday, his post-game speech.
Great job. Hey, this is what off-season training camp, this week of practice, which was a wonderful week of practice, a great, great week of practice. Man, and I appreciate this coaching staff right here. What a great job of getting you all prepared now. I mean, a great job. And you guys went out and did what we asked you to do. Now, do we have a bunch of things to clean up? We sure do. And we're going to clean it up. But, man, isn't it nice to clean it up after a win? Huh? Man, appreciate it. Man, the only one that mattered was this one. We're going to enjoy this one for 24.
We love you.
Yeah, Twitch saying, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I'm happy for the junkie. You happy for David Culley? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Look, cool. That was nice. Good post-game speech. That was neat. My biggest takeaway from it? What's his name? Oh, Easterby still standing
Did you see him?
In the middle. I put it on Twitter early this morning. I started my prep. It was the first thing I saw this morning. Good morning, me. I got my cup of coffee, sat down to do the prep, listened to old David Culley's locker room speech. Jack Easterby front and center, right smack dab in the middle of the locker room.
There's no question he thinks he's the bright idea guy. His head looks like a light bulb. You can't miss him. He's standing there with Caserio way too close to everything going on. At a certain point, with all the teams that I've worked for, and granted, it's not football, it's basketball, but there's a separation with the exception of Daryl Morey. There's a separation at a certain point with the players and the coaches and then the upper management. And you could be on the outside perimeter looking in on some of those key meetings and times talking to the team and all those things. If you're the owner, you can be wherever you want. But at a certain point, you don't need to be right up in the coach's front pocket when he's addressing the team. And Jack Easterby just looks so out of place sitting there. And then Caserio, who looks like he should be the angry Deflategate ball boy or something like that. He's got the scowl on his face, like someone just took care of his Cheerios. And it's like, what are you guys doing there front and center, first and foremost? And Jack, why you got your hands on the football? Just get out of the locker room.
I didn't even notice he had a hand on the
ball.
He does have a hand on the football. That's quite the revelation. I didn't realize he had the hand on the football. Apparently, Caserio was in the coach's box during the game, which we kind of expected.
I heard he left.
Did he leave?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't really. I know he spent the first half there. I didn't receive word on the second half. But yeah, Jack Easterby right smack dab in the middle of it. And there was also a moment when Brandon Cooks was giving a game ball to David Culley when Jack Easterby extended his right arm to Nick Caserio and was trying to push him towards the ball. And then the scene like cut out, so you couldn't quite see like the outcome of it. But it seemed like Easterby was trying to push Caserio into like the middle and in the limelight of this all.
Caserio doesn't seem the guy that wants to be in the middle of any of it. He wants no part of it.
He's like, get your hands off of me.
And Easterby, for his part in all this, he should want no part of it, because the sight unseen Jack Easterby is the only way that he gets a pass for any length of time with this team. Because the more he's seen, the more it just stirs up all those bad feelings, and more Texans fans go, why? That's right. Why the hell is he still around?
I don't understand.
I mean, he should just try and stay out of the limelight as much as possible, and yet that freaking light bulb head is popping up wherever there's a camera, and it's annoying as hell.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, number to call, number to text. Had a texter saying the barbecue did the Texans well. Hey, you can't knock the barbecue anymore. It did treat the Texans well. As they went 1-0.
What happens first if they get game pounded after the by barbecue? The
what happens if?
Yeah, then the barbecue. If? Was the barbecue still so good? I'm saying that they're already double digit dogs.
Yep.
And it's going to get worse based on the fact that Cleveland's going to have the red ass.
I'm worried about that game.
So that's why we said, look, we tempered everything for you by saying, look, this was the game last week that we both said they were going to win, because this was the only game on their schedule that it looked like they had a legit chance to win. Now, Just like David Culley said, enjoy it for 24 hours. But then temper your emotions and come back to reality to realize that Browns team hung with the Chiefs for 3.5 quarters. And they're a damn good football team. At home, they're going to be pissed off. And you are going to have your hands full. So before you start thinking this is the outside chance to win the division and all that stuff, just savor the victory. You got one. You're not going without a win all season long. And then realize you're going to have a steady dose of reality this coming week because Cleveland's going to be ready for you.
Yeah, it's a feel-good win. It's feel-good in the sense of, okay, maybe Nick Caserio knows what he's doing. To me, it wasn't so much about, and I'm going to channel my inner Nick Caserio here, it wasn't so much about the result as it was about the process. Like we saw, the team was prepared to play. They were well-coached, and they came out, executed a game plan, and they beat a rookie quarterback. Going from a rookie quarterback and maybe the worst team in the NFL, top three worst teams in the NFL, to a Cleveland Browns team that is the favorite to win their division, a dark horse contender for a Super Bowl, it's going to be vastly different next week whenever the Cleveland Browns are your opponent as opposed to Jacksonville. One thing that was a common theme amongst the post-game sound yesterday coming from the Texans was the fact that they were able to distract, or they were able to ignore all the noise, that they don't care about it. And here was David Culley talking about that.
First of all, let me tell you this about the noise. The only noise that matters to this franchise and this team is the noise inside this building and this room. And that's the only noise that's mattered to us. That's the reason, as I said before, when we went out and played this game today, and if we did things the right way, we'd have a chance to win the game. And we did that today, and we won.
That makes sense, right? I mean, if you're in that locker room, you're a part of the team, you're not going to listen to guys like you and me say the Texans are going to go 1-16, 2-15. So that's the way you have to handle business if you're the Houston Texans and you're the head coach of the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I agree with you. Again, look, you're right. Okay, you know what? And we've talked about this. In the city of Houston, it's easy to pull for the good guys that are managing and coaching all three teams, right? You don't have ill will. You just have question marks about the long-term possibilities this coach can do with this team, this roster, for this franchise. It's not to say that David Culley's not a great guy, and you want all the best for him on and off the field. And I'm nitpicking and poking some fun at the fact that he chews his tongue like bubblegum.
Yeah.
But besides that, you can't help but be pulling for the guy. It's just he's in a really tough situation. And he probably all along wasn't the right guy that everybody wanted to see for this job.
See, I push back on that, actually.
Okay.
I think he was the right guy for this job for the next 2 to 3 seasons because they knew they're not going to be very good. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to bring in a hot shot. Like, what's the point of bringing in Joe Brady and handing Joe Brady a terrible offense with Tyrod Taylor as your quarterback? Like, that really makes no sense. So why not have the good personality, somebody who's easy to work with, somebody that, quite frankly, you can control, right?
Yeah.
You can tell him what you're going to do. He's not going to push back whenever you trade away Zach Cunningham. So in that sense, like, he was the right guy at the right time. I don't at all think he's like
a
good coach. Yeah, absolutely he is.
Okay.
I thought we were yeah, talking with the premise of that already being set.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying, look, I get it. It's the same way I feel about Steven Silas. I pull for the guy because he got a raw deal, whether he saw it or not, or he just saw the opportunity, and I think it's a little bit different. I think Silas still has a lot of coaching left in him. So I think this was his stepping stone to proving, you guys overlooked me for too long, and now that I'm here, based on what I did with Luka, I'm going to show you that you guys made some missteps because now I'm going to be a coach to be reckoned with. I think from Culley's perspective, it was like, oh my God, look what just fell into my lap. I never thought I was going to get this chance. And now, in the twilight of my career, I get the opportunity. As long as he has the clear mindset of they didn't hire me for the long term and they're going to give me the title and some decent money, but they don't have any aspirations of me taking this team where it needs to go long term. If he's got that reality, then we're fine. But if he came in with the false sense of, you know what, I'm going to take the job, then I'm going to do it, and I'm going to really take him to the next level, you can't do that with the roster you have.
No, but I mean, he's also a competitor, right? He's also a competitor, and I don't think he came in saying, you know, we're gonna only win 2-3 games. I'm just going to be here 2 to 3 years. You know, somewhere his internal, you know, competitor in him, his inner fire is, hey, I'm gonna shock everybody. We're gonna win 9-10 games, and I'm gonna be the coach for the next 5-6 seasons. So I'm ready to retire.
But you know what, Jeremy? This is the one good thing about doing what they both have done, starting with Caserio in the veterans on short term deals at low money. Veterans know how to stay professional. And at the end of the day, you can say whatever you want from a media perspective. You can hear all of the gums bumping. But you know what? The veterans know what it takes to win.
Yeah.
And so the focus you got from guys like Mark Ingram that said, y'all thought we were going to be terrible. Y'all wrote us off as this and that. But in this locker room, and that's what you have with a veteran presence. You're not being run by loose cannons anymore. From the coaching staff to the veterans in that locker room, they're coaching up the young guys, and they're knowing what it takes to win on Sundays. And that showed because they were better prepared. And the guys that might not be their star players, but the guys across the board that were mixed in, that were veterans, kept that team grounded all game. And you could see it at the end of the day in the results. They were, from the veterans in the locker room and the coaching staff, they were coached up far better and prepared.
No doubt about it. You know, another thing that the veterans in the locker room do whenever you have veterans like that that are on short-term deals and they realize their best football is behind them, they don't make a lot of noise. They don't make a lot of noise whenever you're 3-14 and you're in the middle of a rebuild. And I think Caserio had the presence of mind to bring in, whether it was coaches or players, that aren't going to be huge distractions of a 3-14 team whenever you're in the middle of a rebuild and a hard reset for the organization.
Part of the reason that Cam Newton wouldn't have fit here.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, Cam Newton flat out said himself, I've been a distraction as a backup quarterback. He said it himself, kind of torpedoed his own career. But maybe he doesn't have to be a backup in the
Bradley
NFL.
Roby. Addition by subtraction, right?
He was a vocal guy.
Absolutely. But before that even happened, starting at the end of last season, he was a guy that wasn't afraid to mix it up. Push back on coaches, you know, say it's my way, not or the highway.
I don't think Caserio, though, is going to coward do that, though.
No, that's what I'm saying, too.
He's not going to get rid of somebody who can bring in some, like, tangible assets just to get rid of them. I think the perfect example of that's Deshaun Watson. Like, he's not budging on that demand at all. I don't think he would have traded Bradley Roby because he was, somebody that was a distraction or making noise in the locker room for a fifth rounder. Not when he did it. Maybe closer to the deadline, but not week one.
Okay. I understand that point, but my pushback on that is he already knows with what he's trying to do for the long term and what he's trying to put in terms of whether you call it the Patriot way or his philosophy. If he's got a guy that's going to completely buck everything that he tries to do, both on the field, in the locker room, and during the week, he's not going to have that guy around for long.
I think he will whenever they're winners, though.
I agree with that.
Like Randy Moss to New England. I think once they're winners,
guys like that,
you have a little bit more patience for that kind of guy. So the hard reset's wise, and I totally understand where Nick Caserio is doing right now, despite some of the trades maybe being Antonio Brown. Whenever you're a winner, it's worth rolling the dice. A busy week in college football. Upsets, some local games didn't really go the way people thought. We'll dive into it all next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, let's tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. We were there on remote on Friday, and you guys were coming in, and you guys were reaping the benefits of knowing that Apollo Men's Health can get you feeling like you felt like in your heyday once again when you thought those days were well behind you. That's because for men and women, they have hormone therapy, and we saw both men and women in the lobby getting ready to meet with their physicians and get them taken care of so that they can get that energy ready for the weekend, ready for the week ahead, and they can do the same thing for you. They have testosterone therapy that can be administered in the office weekly. You can do it yourself at home, and they can teach you how. Or you can do, if you're a man, cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy where you only have to come in once every 6 months, but you reap all the benefits of coming in like you would if you were coming in weekly. You want to get on a workout program, they're going to set you up, they're going to get you going, and it starts with a full body composition analysis that literally only takes a minute, but gives you the results and the kind of numbers that you can chart when you make progress when you start working out. Recover quicker, HGH peptide therapy. So many different things they can do. Your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself, and it starts with making that first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com, and you're going to find out most major insurances accepted discounts for military personnel and first responders. But then they're going to have you come in for a meeting. And in that consultation, you got to be honest with those tough questions that they ask you. If you are, they'll find you results. They'll put you on a program. They'll get you where you need to go. I believe in them. You can too. You mentioned my name, Joel Blank. Free B12 shot on your first visit. I get a B12 shot every week, and I feel like it gives me a little extra energy and juice. I think you can do the same thing for you. Check them out today. You're going to be glad you did. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by. It's good people doing great things at Apollo Men's Health.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's a busy weekend in college football as well. And did you catch this upset? Late Saturday night, when everybody was kind of already in bed, all the big games had already happened. But Jacksonville State did this.
Snap to Cooper. Looking down the field. He's got a man. Caught it. He's free. Phil Yall Johnson at the 10. At the 5. Touchdown. Touchdown. There are no flags. Touchdown pass on the final snap of the game. Jacksonville State has won it.
A little Dave Southee on that. It's got a man at the 10. But
Dave South and the Fighting Texas Aggies.
The Fighting Texas Aggies. How about that, though? Jacksonville State beating Florida State. Final play of the game. What really wasn't even a Hail Mary. It was more of a go route. Guy got free, broke a tackle. Poor tackling at the end of that play, by the way. Jacksonville State, they got shut out by UAB a week ago, 31-0. And then they beat Florida State the very next week. Boy, how the Seminole program. And they looked all right last week. They looked okay against Notre Dame. Like, where did that come from? The ultimate trap game, of course.
Yeah, and here's the crazy thing, right? We already know that there's been issues with the coaching staff and the head coach since he took over there. But, you know, a friend of both of ours and Travis Johnson looked at that Notre Dame game and said, look, if Notre Dame is who a lot of people are projecting them to be, then we might be okay, and we should be pretty good. And then you come back in week two, and that happens to you, and then you take all the positives that you can out of a loss, and you come off of it going, now 0-2, regardless of how good Notre Dame turns out to be, you still aren't in that same league because you can't beat a team like Jackson State. That was embarrassing.
That was embarrassing. I felt bad, too, for Mackenzie Milton because he started that game, and it's one of the best stories in college football. The biggest game was the 11 a.m. game on Fox, and I didn't expect it to be much of a game. Oregon holding on to beat Ohio State, really from start to finish. They look like the better football team. Yep. You thought Ohio State might get that surge at the end but couldn't quite do it, and Oregon did it without their best defensive player.
Yeah, they did, and we were worried about the early start time affecting Oregon, but they were in control for most of that ball game. It got interesting and dicey a little bit at the end, but otherwise it was Oregon's game to lose, and the Buckeyes were trying their very best to do a last-ditch effort to try and win. But that's what you get when you get a freshman quarterback. And the crazy thing is that we look across the programs, and even with A&M, who had just an absolute stinker, but the good news was is that people will soon forget it because at least they found a way to win in the end. But we've been talking about the quarterback position at both of these schools, and Justin Fields coming out of Ohio State. But the thing is, as much as these kids all want to play, and if they don't get the starting job, Spencer Rattler, you know, you go up and down the list, Justin Fields, all these guys where they start in their first program. If it doesn't work out, they go to the next one. They might even go to one third one if it has to be that way. Joe Burrow, another perfect example. But you look at it and go, well, why don't you at least keep two around that can actually play the game? Just like we talk about in the NFL, the Nick Foles syndrome should have told you that if you're a contending team and you know how fragile it is if your quarterback goes down, and how vital it is that you have at least a above-average replacement. That's why we think Cam might still have a home in the NFL. From a college football perspective, when it costs you nothing but a scholarship, and you can at least keep another guy around, why aren't you? Because Ohio State, we've seen multiple programs go to their second option at quarterback because their first guy just didn't have it going that day, and he's young. These are the kind of things that boggle my mind when I look at it. Georgia's known for it with Kirby Smart and not being able to keep the good ones around. Sumlin was known for the same thing. You're looking at an A&M program, and I'm looking at Jimbo going, as much as we said you got to get your guy, it's in your best interest to get multiple guys.
I'm with you. I don't understand why you don't bring in a veteran guy just to be there in that backup role. And even if he's just grooming the younger players, yep. Right? Because like in a power program, a program that's clicking on all cylinders, usually whenever a guy's ready to take over is probably his second, third year in the program. Like your guy. Like he's going to be the blue chip. He's going to be the guy that can win you a conference championship. But then after that, usually you have the young quarterbacks that you hope eventually take his spot once they move on to the NFL and the perfect world. Why not have that bridge guy too? Where if the freshman isn't quite ready for that moment, knowing that there's more than likely going to be an injury to a quarterback at some point, whether it's for multiple games or if it's just for a couple of plays, you have a guy that you feel comfortable taking the snaps. The moment's not going to be too big. Even if it's like a grad transfer, you know, just somebody who's been in the spot.
Well, you saw what happened at South Carolina this year. They had all those guys in and they couldn't get the right guys. So their grad transfer that was had 1 year of eligibility left that was going to be on the coaching staff, they brought back, and he was the starting quarterback in week one. But you look across the board, Cam Newton was Tim Tebow's backup.
Yep.
And whether it worked out at Florida or elsewhere, he still got his chance. And if you play, you can play, you can play. You'll find a place to play. Look at the kid that started at A&M and went to U of H.
Oh, you're talking about Murray.
Not Murray.
Allen.
Allen. Yeah, yeah. And Allen ends up in the NFL. Why? Because you know what? At the end of the day, he could still play. We talk about this over and over again. Even a guy like Trask, who didn't even play in high school because he was playing behind De'Aaron King. But you know what? If you can play, they're going to find you, and you're going to find it. That's why I can't believe there's not more depth at these big-time programs to prepare for this very thing.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, it's hard in the sense because all those younger guys that are talented are leaving, but why not bring in the guy who's, you know, can play, that's a fifth-year guy that just wants to be at a good program? Maybe he's not going to be an NFL type of quarterback, but he's a good, solid college quarterback.
And you have the discussion with him, right? You say, hey, look, this is the way the cards are playing out right now. You may never get a shot. But you know what? We're going to do you a solid, your scholarship and everything, maybe even guarantee you after that we'll keep you around as a grad assistant or whatever if you want to be groomed to be a coach. But do us a solid, we'll do you a solid, scratch each other's backs, and we move on.
Yeah, a good fifth-year quarterback, good solid college quarterback. A&M and Texas, both which they had that. Texas A&M winning ugly in Colorado. The game was played at Denver. They lost Haynes King. They were down late in the fourth quarter. Zach Calzada, the backup, came in. Didn't look great, but did good enough to get that last drive for the touchdown. A&M survives. They're undefeated. But, boy, they can't be feeling very confident after two games.
No, I look at that and I say, how long are they going to be able to maintain this and stay in the top five? Because, you know, that's just another setback amongst already enough issues that you're looking at from top to bottom with the roster going, I don't know the sustainability of this team.
I mean, they dropped two spots in last night's AP down to seven.
Yeah, I don't know how the sustainability for a full season, especially with the SEC schedule staring you in the face, and now you got quarterback issues. I just... enjoy it while you got it, Aggie fans, because I'm not sure how you're going to sustain it all season long. And from a Longhorns perspective, again, this is just like we were talking about. It's week one of the NFL. The same thing with the Longhorns. Well, the Longhorns were back, and Sark had them already playing at a different level, and you could just see it in week one. And then along comes this steamroll from Arkansas, and you're like, nope, he's probably not there yet.
Yep. Wisconsin and U of H, we both got back on track this weekend, too.
Did they play anybody?
It's always nice to see a win in the win column, though. That the 1-1 looks a lot better than the 0-1. Biggest movers in the AP, by the way, Oregon, might figure. They moved up eight spots into the number four spot. That number four spot's pretty wide open. I think anybody can make the college football playoff this season. Iowa beating Iowa State, they moved up five spots. So you're looking at Alabama 1, Georgia 2, Oklahoma 3, Oregon 4, Iowa 5, and then Clemson, A&M 6-7, Cincinnati 8. Ohio State 9, Penn State 10.
Are you a believer in Oklahoma? Open.
Not really, but I think they can run the slate.
Yeah, their schedule is conducive, right? It's not an SEC-type schedule. But even Spencer Rattler's not been impressive, and Oklahoma, to me, when I look at them, they're not the Oklahoma of the past. I would agree with you that the four spot's wide open, but I would say the third isn't solidified by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I don't think Oklahoma's a top five team in the country, but I don't think they're going to lose a game. Like, I mean, their biggest game's Iowa State, obviously, and Iowa State just got beat by Iowa, and that game's at home, second to last game of the year. So, I mean, who are they going to lose to? I mean, they're going to lose Texas in Dallas, at Oklahoma State maybe, last game of the regular season. So,
and you also got to believe upset.
They'll be favored in every game they play.
You got to believe Clemson's really not playing anybody either. So Clemson's the surefire bet to get in there and get back there after the loss to Georgia. Now you got to figure it out. If you're Oklahoma, you should be able to get there, but they haven't been that impressive. I think it's a little bit more wide open. Alabama with their young quarterback, sure, they look good early. But again, that SEC schedule is going to change a lot, including the fact that the SEC schools have 1-2 right now.
I don't think anybody's great outside of Alabama and Georgia is the thing. Like, it's wide open to me after those top two teams in the country.
Clemson can be.
Can be. Yeah. And again, you can't read too much into an early season college football team.
Right.
I mean, it takes a while and you don't have preseason games. The problem is you get knocked for it. You lose one game week one, and if you're not Clemson, if you're not Ohio State, you really have no chance to win the national championship. All right, coming up next, Mark Lane, who covers the Texans for Yahoo Sports and Texans Wire. He'll join us to talk about the week one victory for the Houston Texans. It's next, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Welcome back into the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Joining us now on the HR&P guest line is Mark Lane. Mark writes for Yahoo Sports and the Texans Wire. Mark, thanks for coming on. Texans getting the victory yesterday. I don't think it was surprising in the sense that they won. To me, surprising, though, in how they dominated.
Definitely, because you figure that they would be able to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars, given that they were down in the same talent pool with them in everybody's power rankings coming into this season. But it was the fact that Tyrod Taylor threw for 291 yards, almost had his first 300-yard passing game since December 24th of 2016. It was the fact that Mark Ingram carried the ball very well and had 86 yards and a touchdown. And even that defense took their ability to cultivate takeaways, which we saw throughout preseason, and brought it to an actual NFL game and got three interceptions. They would have had a fourth takeaway if that fumble from James Robinson wouldn't have rolled out of bounds. So it is the fact that they look like a polished team, and more importantly, they look like they have fixed some of the problems that ailed them last season, like stopping the run, generating takeaways, and also protecting the football. So it's how they won, like you said, that was really that's what's catching everybody's eyes right now.
Mark, on top of that, when you say righting the wrongs, the one thing that's been just a glaring upgrade for me, even through the preseason, but now especially after week one, is the upgrade in the coaching staff. You can say what you want about David Culley and a first-time head coach as the CEO of this entire coaching staff, but regardless of whether it was Caserio or Culley who put the staff together, these guys are such an upgrade from camping on the line to the fact that you've got Lovey doing what he's doing defensively to kind of throw different looks at a rookie quarterback. Even Kelly looks completely different than when Bill O'Brien was there. But the thing that's been most impressive to me has been the fact that this coaching staff has upped it. You don't even see the mental mistakes, the penalties, and the being out of positions that you saw under Bill O'Brien. That's what's been a big positive for me. I don't know what your take is on that.
I would highlight three mental errors from the game. Two of them are from Malik Collins when he got those roughing the passer calls. And then I thought the decision to accept the penalty and retry the down in the, I think it was the second quarter. And then when if you would have selected to have Jacksonville kick the field goal, you know, maybe they would have made it. Maybe they get 3 points on the board. Instead, they turned it around and they got seven, and that was when Malik Collins had his first roughing the passer call. But other than that, it is hard to find any mental errors, any schematic errors, any just, like you said, the bullheadedness in philosophy that was common when Bill O'Brien was on the sidelines. And I think that's what was refreshing for a lot of Texans fans as well. And even when you contrast Culley and O'Brien, Culley, he looks like he's having fun out there. O'Brien always looked miserable. And I think that is also what's attractive, is that Culley's a walk-around coach, but he's not really involved in everything the way O'Brien was. He just lets people do their own thing. And frankly, anytime you can upgrade your defensive coordinator from a guy who did it for the first time in his career in Anthony Weaver to someone who coached the Chicago Bears to their most recent Super Bowl appearance in 06, the St. Louis Rams, he was their defensive coordinator in 01, in Lovie Smith, that's always going to be an upgrade. By the way, Brandon Cooks, after the game, guys, he said that he can tell that Tim Kelly has grown in his play calling. He talked about his feel for the game. So even the decision to keep on Kelly as an offensive coordinator and a play caller is paying off for this staff.
Being joined by Mark Lane, Yahoo Sports, writes for the Texans Wire. I caught that too. Do you think that was him kind of saying that maybe the restraints of Bill O'Brien were no longer on Tim Kelly?
Yes. for sure. And because if you'll remember, back in 2019, Kelly was the offensive coordinator. And then, well, you know, he's just not going to call the plays. So he was the offensive coordinator. And then in 2020 at the combine, it was announced that he would be the play caller. But still, some of the play calling was too familiar, if you can say. And Kelly did a good job of mixing personnel groups in there. He had a decent feel for the game. He wasn't trying to impose a will or philosophy upon the game. He was feeling the game out, and it also helped that Houston didn't have any giveaways. Houston did a good job converting on third down. They went 12 of 21. And so in some ways, Kelly was able to call the game because he didn't have a lot of setbacks, and that's what helped as well.
And they got more turnovers than they could have imagined a season ago. But, Mark, I'm interested – in your perspective, looking at this from how the nation looks at this team, they were supposed to be the doormat of the league. They were supposed to be the laughingstock continued in the way that they've gone about their business. How much does this win go to dispel a lot of that, or at least mute it, in the fact that this wasn't just a win? This was a pretty impressive win because they were in control for the entire game.
Yeah, I think they'll start to get to about the upper 20s. I mean, you know, the bottom 20s, whatever. The power rankings are so confusing.
Yeah.
But anyway, they'll be about 23, 24-ish in people's power rankings. I think that it got lost amid all of the other storylines from week one. But if they can beat Cleveland and start 2-0 for the first time since 2016 when Brock Osweiler was quarterback, then I think that's going to catch people's attention. Because no one thought they could put together a winning streak in 2021. And the Browns are favorably in the spotlight right now coming off of their playoff win. So that'll catch people's attention. But if you listen to Mark Ingram, you listen to David Culley, they don't pay attention, at least they say they don't, pay attention to the noise outside of NRG Stadium. They only care about what's going on in the building. And if they can maintain that focus amid all of the travails and the successes that come throughout every regular season, then I think they'll be able to mess up their positioning for the number one overall pick.
Interesting you phrase it that way, because we here in the Killer Bees like to have the mantra of embrace the suck, kind of the Philadelphia 76er, trust the process, be bad, get the number one overall pick. And, you know, getting the victory yesterday certainly doesn't help that. And I was curious your opinion of, like, did this change, this victory over Jacksonville, change your perception of what could be the ceiling for this team?
I always thought that this team, if everything went right, that they could be a 6-7 win ball club. I don't think it changed it because they got the W against the Jaguars. You know what I mean? It's the fact they got the three takeaways. How will this hold up against, you know, Pro Bowl quarterbacks, against playoff winning quarterbacks, because it seemed to work against a number one overall pick making his first start in the NFL, which, by the way, guys, the Texans win yesterday. It preserved David Carr's streak of being the only number one overall pick since 2002 to win a game in his first start.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark, as we get ready to wrap the segment, but I got to throw this at you. We've said, look, this was the only game on the schedule that looked like they were going to be favored or they had a legit chance to win the game. Now you look at it. They've got this momentum, but they're going to run into a buzzsaw. Cleveland's got the red ass. They were basically they had that game for three quarters with the Chiefs. And the rest of the schedule is not going to be in their favor. We saw Bradley Roby go. Is this still under the big process of Nick Caserio and his plan going forward? Is this still a team that should be listening to any and all offers for all veterans on the table, regardless of Deshaun Watson, because of the fact that this is about the big picture? This isn't about this season.
Yeah, because it is, as Caserio said early in the year, process oriented, not necessarily results oriented. And so if you look at it, he's trying to accumulate draft picks in the top 100 because that's where you can find your starters and players that can contribute immediately. So I think that they will listen to offers, but the offers have to make sense. Again, taking the Watson situation as an example, according to Adam Schefter, they don't listen to anybody that wants conditional picks. They want this. They have what they're looking for. So I think if teams are willing to meet that threshold for particular players and not try to nickel and dime them, then I think that they would consider trades.
Mark, thanks so much for coming on. Great stuff. And you can catch Mark's work at the Texans Wire. We'll catch up someday soon, all right?
All right, leave the lat string out for me, guys.
Will do. Mark Lane, managing editor of the Texans Wire. What did you think of the Texans? What do you think? Did it change your opinion of what the ceiling is for this Houston Texans team? The ceiling is the roof, of course. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll get to some of your calls whenever we return. Also, fantasy football failures. What were your fantasy football failures yesterday? 713-780-3776. That's next on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, well, before we go to the break, we've been telling you all along there was a lot of action to be had when you were talking about college and pro games this weekend, the first weekend with both college and pro football in action, and you wanted to make games more interesting? Well, you go to mybookie.ag. That's what you're supposed to do, because if you go to mybookie.ag, games instantaneously can become more interesting, because even if you don't have a rooting interest on either side, you start putting money down on it, and you know you're doing it where your money is secure. It's going to be safe. If you win, they're going to pay. And they have all kinds of contests and deals going throughout the season where you can get free plays and other contests where you can cash in without having to cash out to get involved. That's why you go to mybookie.ag. And one of those deals I'm telling you about, that's that double the first deposit deal that's coming out, that's been out, it's going to continue, and it's the deal you need to jump on. Whether you're an existing customer, you were previously a customer, or you're signing up for the first time, up to $1,000, when you put your first deposit in your account, they're going to double that. Say you put $100 in, now all of a sudden you got $200 in your account. More money in your account means more games to play and more chances to win. That's how they do it at MyBookie. Just put the promo code in, BET975, when you sign up at mybookie.ag, and then let the fun begin. Start betting on games and make every game more interesting. Start with Monday Night Football tonight. Get ready for that college slate next week. And also, again, week two starting Thursday night with NFL games. Get on board with mybookie.ag, because that's where you want to be. Your money is safe. They pay out when you win, and they double your first deposit. Check them out right now. Up to $1,000 for new, current, and former MyBookie customers. MyBookie.ag, bet975 promo code. It's extra money credited to your account instantly just for using that code, and that's when you make your next deposit. Rollover rules will apply to your bonus deposit, but you need to see the website for all the details. But best believe, whether you're betting on your phone, your laptop, or your tablet, it's easy, it's fun, and there's only one place to play. It's mybookie.ag. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. MyBookie.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, we'll get to fantasy football failures in 5 minutes. What were yours? 713-780-ESPN. I have my fair share of them because I'm in a lot of leagues. 713-780-3776. Let's go to our HRP listener line. James has been holding the longest. James, what's up?
Hey, guys, what's going on, man?
What's up?
Hey, I got a question for you. You were talking earlier before you had your guest on talking about the Texans, breaking them down. But the top 10, top 5 NCAA, how is Florida not – I mean, I get what Oregon did and who they did it against, but how are they not ranked higher?
Yeah, I guess you could have a case.
But when I say Florida, I mean the Gators.
Yeah, they should be higher than, I think, Ohio State. I mean, it shocked me that Ohio State stayed at number 9 ahead of Penn State, who beat Wisconsin, a good Wisconsin team, ahead of Florida, who's at 11. I mean, they're not bad. They're better.
They're their biggest question mark is the most important position on the field, and they let their starter get away to Notre Dame.
Right.
Like, so there's a lot to be proven there.
I get that. But Wisconsin's a ranked team. Yep. Penn State's 2-0. What's Ohio State done? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Penn State should be ahead of Ohio State at this point. I wouldn't put too much stock in the rankings at this point. Like, if you're Florida, you're the number 11 team in the country, you're playing an SEC schedule, you have nothing to worry about. You take care of your business, you're going to be in the top four in the college football rankings at the end of the season. So I think at this point of the year, I hate rankings, by the way. I hate college football rankings.
Why?
Because you have to, it's worth too much. It's too valuable. It's too valuable, the rankings, because then the college football committee, when they put together their playoff, they rely too much on what the AP has to say. I hate the fact that college football doesn't have, like, these qualifiers to get into the playoff. Like, in the NFL, you win your division, you're in. You have a better record than the other teams in your conference, you're in. It's like that for every single sport. College football is not. I just don't like the way that it's set up in that sense.
But I'll push back on that in the fact that, at the end of the day, though, in most cases, if you win your conference, if you get your conference championship game, it'll take care of itself for the most part. Like, there'll be a clear cut for most cases based on the way it's set up with the different conferences. But, I mean, it just makes it more fun during the course of the week to try and, you know, get through all the parity and figure out who's where and why.
Yeah.
You're right, though. From a Florida perspective, you're spot on. I mean, if they do what they need to do and handle their business, they're going to be fine. They got a dynamic quarterback. He can run. He can pass. Can I just ask, by the way, how anyone at Florida is allowed to wear number 15? I mean,
retire it.
You're talking about arguably the greatest college football player of all time, and I get Archie Griffin and a few others.
Case Keenum.
But, yeah, okay, that's for you. But maybe U of H should retire that number. But for all Tim Tebow did, it's a travesty that anybody can wear 15. But I hear what you're saying because you wanted to give Florida more love. I think that Jeremy's spot on it. If they do what they need to do and handle their business in the SEC, you'll be fine at the end of the year. I just don't know that they're going to do that.
I like the rankings from the conversation. I don't like how much value it carries in college football, where in other sports it really doesn't, right? You win your conference, you go to the tournament, you have a selection committee, things like that. I just wish the playoff would expand. It's basically like this long, thought-out
take
I'm making.
But you also realize that, you know what, this isn't the rankings are basically weighted more for marketing than they are for the actual football itself. Because at the end of the day, you're talking more about college football when the rankings come out.
Yep.
Everybody like us is talking about, oh, the new rankings are out. Oh, where did so-and-so go if they lost? Or so-and-so, how far did they rise when they won like Oregon? So from a marketing perspective, NCAA loves any kind of rankings. That's why they'll never go anywhere.
And Florida, by the way, in the AP poll is number 9, actually ahead of Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Penn State. So it depends on which of the two that you look at. And if you want to believe that the AP poll and the coaches' poll don't matter, they're not supposed to whenever the college football committee puts their power rankings together a little bit later on in the college football season. 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to some fantasy football failures. And we start off with Keith. Keith, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I did 2 failures. First, I don't understand. Derrick Henry didn't do jack, and so I misread that. And then number 2,
you didn't
misread
that one though. Like, you're not benching Derrick Henry. Like, that wasn't a misread. That just sucked.
Yeah. It's an arbitration, however you say it. Yeah. So and then I left Godwin on the bench Thursday. And I should have known better, but I won't make that mistake again. And yes, he did push off, but like Michael Jordan said, they didn't call it. I didn't do it. Yeah, I have a good one.
All right, Keith. I wonder who Keith was playing to bench Godwin. I mean, Godwin's one of the best receivers in the NFL. 9 catches for 105 and a touch.
The over-under was 2.5 on touchdown passes. We said not only was Brady going over, but we thought he might do it by halftime. And he obliterated that. So Godwin was one, but, you know, it's a busy stable of receivers in Tampa.
It's scary there.
So it's a hit and miss. I get that. Henry, you got to play. I would say, like, if you're looking at the biggest misses, Aaron Rodgers is Exhibit A.
I had him in one of my leagues, yeah.
Ryan Tannehill wasn't great, but he was okay. Jones.
But at least you wouldn't count on, like, see, Tannehill, like, that, like, you're making the decision with Tannehill to go with him over somebody else more than likely. Because if you're, like, in a 12-team league, Tannehill's probably, what, your 8th best quarterback, somewhere 8 through 14. So you're making that call there. Like, that's kind of on you at that point. I would say the same thing with Ronald Jones. Like, who, Ronald Jones, one, he's sharing a backfield with Leonard Fournette. It looks like Leonard Fournette's getting a little bit more of the touches and the carries there in Tampa Bay.
Isn't he got put in the doghouse super quick.
He got benched after the fumble.
Right, but he still had 9 carries to Jones' 4. He had 5 catches to Jones' 0.
Still like, 13 yeah. total carries.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Ronald Jones would have had the majority of all that had he not fumbled.
I think.
Oh, you're saying Jones was in the doghouse. I thought you said Fournette. Yeah, my bad.
Although Fournette did a lot of things to, as Bruce Arians said, because of his level of focus, to not exactly solidify anything with them either. They've got running back issues in the big picture, I think.
713-780-3776. Aaron Rodgers was my number one fantasy failure this week. It was a dog of a game. How about Ezekiel Elliott? You know, he's a running back that's going in the first round. Maybe you got him at the turn, but he was terrible in game one. I think a lot of that, too, was game plan specific. Although I'm really watching Ezekiel Elliott in game two to see if he's somebody I can count on the rest of the year. We had a texter at 713-780-3776 say Saquon Barkley.
Yep. He was one of mine.
Yes. Aaron Jones.
Saquon Barkley, though, like.
He's coming off injury.
Coming off the ACL.
Yeah, you got to worry about I mean, you gotta, Saquon Barkley.
Like, tempered expectations. Like, yeah, you say maybe he gets 10 to 12 touches, whatever. You hope he's going to go for 50, 60 yards, whatever. And it never really panned out that well.
Like, you know what?
At least a couple touchdowns, like red, like somewhere in the red zone. Yeah, opportunities.
Derrick Henry, like he said, was a bad one. He had like 55 yards and actually saved himself because he had some garbage yards late. Yeah. What was more frustrating about Derrick Henry, he had 2 goal line touches from the one and couldn't punch it in. So, yeah, a huge disappointment there.
And there, too, Julio Jones looked like the game's passed him by all of a sudden. All the hype in the offseason, and I saw him on a couple drop a ball in the end zone. I saw him look like he doesn't have any kind of separation ability anymore. So there's something to be concerned about for your Tennessee. Aaron Jones was awful. The Packers didn't run the ball at all. He got the big contract. I know he went high in a lot of drafts. He was awful.
Yeah, he was.
And on the flip side, the upside of guys, like I said, if you played Tyrod Taylor yesterday, then you're one of those fantasy football quote-unquote experts that don't care what the teams do, and if you just think that they're going to get you the stats you need, if you played a Teddy Bridgewater, Jameis didn't do – against the Packers, you would think that was going to be a tough game for Jameis, but 5 touchdowns with the lack of yards, the touchdowns alone carried you there. And then when you look at the top of the draft board and who you were going to take, everybody was like, well, Christian McCaffrey might have lost something. No, he didn't, because he did it again, both catching the ball and running the ball with a massive day.
Can I give you an underrated fantasy failure?
Yeah.
Maybe the best of the week? Josh Jacobs, Las Vegas Raiders. He got downgraded to questionable yesterday because illness. He's sick.
Yep.
And also, like, when the news came out was at the 3 o'clock slate of games, so who could you pick up? Like, I have him going in one of my leagues. I had to pick up Peyton Barber, who they just got off free agency.
Is that their backup? Like,
Kenyon
Drake is, but he's not available on the waiver wire.
Oh, no. Well, you don't know. I mean, it depends on how big your rosters are that you could possibly get Kenyon Drake. But that really screws you if you don't have all day Sunday to make a move like that. If you get the word out early. Yeah, that's a tough one right there. And another sleeper that I would think people have to look at now after week one, Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold looked pretty damn good for Carolina.
I had him going in one of mine, too. But some fantasy failures there. If you want to text him in, you can. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Got some texts and calls on the line. We'll take those as well when we return. And what is the national media saying about Deshaun Watson? And is it even relevant? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about new breaks. I've been telling you about them now for months because a lot of the listeners took the message that I was dropping down for them, picked up on it, and new breaks came to them and did their breaks, and they couldn't be happier because of the fact that it saved them time as well as saved them money in the process of getting their brakes fixed. Look, new brakes, this is this new dimension that people aren't thinking about. It's the same way like when you go grocery shopping and you blow an hour and you don't want to do that. Well, now suddenly we've got curbside and we've got home delivery and you don't have to. And saving time means something. Well, you can do the same thing with your brakes. Instead of going to a dirty brake shop and being at the mercy of a mechanic that might spend hours trying to fix your brakes and try to upsell you on other things in the process while you sit in a grungy waiting room and eat vending machine food while watching bad television, you can be at your job and working, and they can fix your brakes in the parking lot. They did it for me here while we were doing a show. They can do it for you at your office, too. They can do it in your driveway, in your garage, while you're cutting the lawn, watching a game, drinking a beer. It doesn't matter. You are relaxed and doing other things and multitasking while they're fixing your brakes. Their prices are competitive with any other brake shop in town, and they use the same quality parts. So why would you go anywhere else other than New Brakes? NUBrakes.com and mention ESPN 97.5, save 10%. But more than that, save a whole lot of time in the process and realize you're going to get your jobs done by a certified technician that only does brakes, and they come to you to do what they do. You mentioned ESPN 97.5, save 10%. Do it right now. NUBrakes.com. That's NUBrakes.com.
ESPN 97.5.